Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Thursday, August 7th, and I'm Nat Cardos reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, the Pond Fire update, Orleans Complex fire update, and Eureka to step up action on shopping cart litter. So stay tuned. News on those stories and more coming up.
Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Tsingkiyon, Wailaki, Wiyot, Wilcut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection these tribes have to this region.
An update on the pond fire in Laytonville. Yesterday around approximately 3:40 p.m., a full wildland was dispatched just north of Highway 101 in Laytonville, named the Pond Fire. As of now, it is currently 24.7 acres and at 40% containment. KMUD News spoke with Sherry Wise, Fire Prevention Specialist and Public Information Officer for CAL FIRE Mendocino Unit, for more details regarding the fire.
So, fire personnel are out there making great progress. They are mitigating hot spots and really strengthening up those containment lines. All evacuation warnings and orders have been lifted. We are still having a lot of equipment moving in and out of the freeway up on the 101 near Woodruff Road. So we caution the public to drive safely through that area. And we are sitting at 40% containment, and they expect a bump to bump those numbers this evening.
Highway 101 is open in both directions, and CAL FIRE advises caution along the Black Oak and Highway 101 corridor as fire equipment is entering and exiting the highway. KMUD News will continue to bring updates as they come. For more information, you can visit protect.genesis.com. That's protect.genasys.com. Today's update on the Orleans Complex fires from the CAL FIRE press release. The Big Cliff Fire continues to burn in Siskiyou County at 895 acres and is currently 19% contained. Active fire behavior continued yesterday, filling in unburned pockets of fuel deep within the fire's perimeter. Crews remain in the Rainbow Mine area to provide structure protection. Today, rising temperatures and strong shifting winds could impact the fire environment with increased activity. A new closure order has been issued on the Salmon Scott River Ranger District for the Big Cliff Fire. The Pacific Crest Trail remains closed between Carter Summit and Etna Summit. The Butler Fire also continues to burn to the west of the Big Cliff Fire and is currently 21,058 acres at 94% containment. The fire has not grown for several days, and resources are monitoring and patrolling, mopping up, chipping material, and backhauling equipment. Motorists are advised to exercise caution when traveling through the burned area, as the risk of unexpected debris across roadways remains. Temperatures will run 10 to 15 degrees above normal, with lower elevations experiencing an extended stretch of triple-digit temperatures. Afternoon humidity will drop under 10% at times, and overnight recoveries will be poor, generally under 40%. Afternoon ridgetop winds will be from the north to northeast today, and tomorrow will transition to west-northwest winds over the weekend. Wind gusts of 20 to 25 miles per hour will be possible each day. Evacuation orders and warnings are in place for the immediate vicinity of the fire. For current evacuation status, visit facebook.com/SiskiyouCountySheriff and facebook.com/SiskiyouCountyOES. Additional evacuation information can be found on protect.genesis.com. That's protect.genasys.com. Many forest roads and trails in the region are still closed. For updates, check the Six Rivers National Forest website or the Siskiyou County Sheriff's Facebook page. Tune in to KMUD Local News for continued coverage of the 2025 local fire season. Stolen and abandoned shopping carts are a familiar sight on the streets of Eureka, but the city plans to change that. Daniel Mintz reports.
With wayward shopping carts littering city streets, the Eureka City Council has given the go-ahead for a new system of returning them to businesses and charging a fee for it. An ordinance amendment addressing the public nuisance of stolen and abandoned shopping carts got initial approval at the August 5th council meeting. The city's current system of handling the carts was described as inefficient. Carts recovered by the city are either taken to the dump or to the city's public works courtyard, which recently stopped accepting them. Although a fee system is in place, it has been difficult to enforce due to a lack of a formal tracking system. Chief Building Official Brendan Riley explained how the new system will return carts to the businesses they came from with a fee charged for it.
We have developed some tags that we're going to zip tie to the carts and then take a picture of the tagged carts, and then we're going to upload that to our GIS system, and it'll allow us to keep a paper trail and be transparent and be able to account for what we will be billing businesses for. Carts that aren't soiled or damaged will be returned to the home businesses, and we just don't want to be dumping things that don't need to go to the dump. But that's just, you know, it's wasteful.
Fines charged to businesses will start at $50 per incident. Riley said, quote, "The problems that we seem to have is with the big out-of-town corporations. It seems to be a cost of doing business, and they just don't seem to care." He added that, quote, "Lately, we've been really noticing an uptick," spurring the new system. Councilmember Renee Contreras-Deloche's question about the legality of charging businesses for things that have been stolen from them led to a discussion with City Attorney Robert Black that surprised her.
You know, if it's a stolen car, if someone steals your car and then it's parked somewhere illegally and it ends up getting towed, I think you'd still be, you know.
Is that true? You get charged the impound costs and everything for your car if your car is stolen? That's an incredible eye-popping. I don't even... We're uncovering a little pile of worms here that I did.
I think that example is a little different because it's usually there's usually a private party involved in towing and storing your vehicle, and so they have to be compensated in some way. I think the kind of the issue with shopping carts is the businesses
Wild.
Are not taking sufficient responsibility, and I think that's what we've heard.
Black added that businesses can have carts with locking wheels, but they, quote, don't sufficiently enforce that. There was some discussion on not wanting to charge fees to local businesses, but Development Services Director Kristen Kenyon said the abandoned carts issue doesn't have a wide scope.
We just have some bad actors in businesses that really don't care about their property getting stolen. And you know, when we used to collect them at the courtyard, Matt Morgan, our code enforcement manager, he said he would call all of them, and some of them, like Eureka Natural Foods, would be like, "Oh yeah, I want that cart. I'll come get it from you," and would come pick it up. And there's other ones where the majority of our carts come from. The majority of them are from just a few of these businesses, and those few businesses, we'd call the manager, and they'd say, "Oh, okay, you have our carts. Good to know." And then they never show up to collect them, okay. And then we were responsible for dealing with them.
So under this ordinance, it looked like there's also a penalty for those stealing the carts, if I read the ordinance correctly.
It allows us to levy a penalty. It gives us that authorization to do so.
Is that going to be pursued as well?
I think once I'm really excited about the tracking system, because once we track, if we can then really, we have the data that it's just a few bad actors, then we can really, like, you know, isolate our enforcement of this.
Kenyon clarified that she was referring to businesses and not cart thieves. But City Manager Miles Slattery said, quote, "If you steal anything, it can be a misdemeanor." The council voted 3-1, with Councilmember Katie Moulton absent, to introduce the ordinance amendment. It'll soon come back for final approval. Councilmember Mario Fernandez cast the dissent vote, saying that charging businesses that have had carts stolen from them is, quote, "Not easy to rectify in my mind." In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
In state news, National Guard troops in L.A. being demobilized after nearly 2 months backing up immigration agents, KPFA's Dahlia Lozier reports.
In June, thousands of California National Guard soldiers rolled into Los Angeles, not to fight wildfires or respond to a national disaster, but to back up federal immigration agents. The deployment was ordered by President Donald Trump after ICE raids sparked protests across Southern California. At its peak, nearly 5,000 troops, including 700 active duty Marines, were stationed in the LA area. Now, after nearly 2 months, most of those troops are going home. The Pentagon announced Wednesday that over 1,300 soldiers were demobilized, following earlier releases of 2,000 Guard members and all 700 Marines. About 250 Guard members are still stationed at Joint Forces Training Base in Los Alamitos, a small suburban facility just outside Long Beach. Local officials have opposed the deployment from the start, with L.A. Mayor Karen Bass criticizing the Trump administration for using National Guard troops as political props.
We are a city of 500 square miles. We had problems in about 2 square miles. It lasted for a couple of days. I initiated a curfew. We have had no problems for weeks. So why were they here? It is a misuse of the men and women who serve our country.
Governor Gavin Newsom is now suing the Trump administration, arguing that the use of federal troops on U.S. soil without the consent of the state violates the Constitution and the Posse Comitatus Act, which limits the military's role in domestic law enforcement. The governor's office also says the deployment has diverted resources from critical public safety operations. Roughly a third of the state's counter-drug task force, which normally works to intercept fentanyl and other narcotics, was reassigned to the Los Angeles mission. Newsom said that he is eager to have the California National Guard troops back under the governor's control.
I want to get them back in our counter-narcotics efforts and our drug interdiction efforts and the task forces that have been firmly assigned, and to support Border Patrol as it relates to some of that effort, not just what's coming in north, but what's going down south with all the gun running and cash that are going through. That's part of it. But I also want them back teaching our kids. I want them back walking the beat with their masks off, building trust, sense of community.
According to the New York Times, the extended mission has also taken a toll on morale. At least 105 National Guard members sought counseling, and dozens have said they won't reenlist once their terms are up. Some were reassigned after objecting to their participation in immigration raids. The remaining Guard members are reportedly spending much of their time on base, with limited assignments and little information about what comes next. One soldier described the experience as a fake mission, while another said the community's support for the Guard had all but evaporated since the deployment. In a written statement, Governor Newsom said, "The women and men of our military deserve more than to be used as props in the federal government's propaganda machine." Newsom also discussed the impact this deployment has had on troops.
They're still waiting for the Pentagon to get their act together, to end this theater once and for all, this cruelty. It's about terrorizing communities. It's about appearing tough. I've said it and I'll repeat it. Weakness masquerading as strength.
There's a mounting economic impact as a result of this deployment, which has cost an estimated $118 million so far. After the federal government ramped up immigration raids statewide, the number of people reporting to work in the private sector dropped by 3%, a dip not seen since the height of the COVID-19 lockdown. Undocumented immigrants contributed over $8 billion in state and local taxes in 2022, a number economists say would climb if undocumented immigrants had a path to work legally. Mass arrests and deportations could eliminate $23 billion in annual tax revenue, a sum more than California's current deficit. While the Pentagon says the remaining troops are there to protect federal personnel and property, many in California see this deployment as part of a broader power struggle between the state and the federal government, with National Guard members caught in the middle. For KPFA News, I'm Dahlia Lozier.
Anti-nuclear activists mark anniversary of Hiroshima bombing with Livermore Lab protest against nuke testing and research, KPFA's Christina Arnestad reports.
Break up this assembly. If you do not do so, you may be arrested. You may also be subject to other police action, including the use of kinetic energy projectiles and chemical agents.
Dozens of nuclear abolitionists gathered at the west entrance of the Lawrence Livermore Laboratories for the 80th anniversary of the U.S. atomic bombing of Hiroshima. The U.S. remains the only nation in the world to drop a nuclear bomb on another country, its nuclear arsenal now being researched, tested, and developed in Livermore. About 9 activists were cited by police who threatened them over a bullhorn with the use of pepper spray, projectiles, and other weaponry, all elders holding hands for a world free from nuclear weapons.
Tear gas, OC, pepper spray, 40-millimeter sponge rounds, irritant field projectiles, and 12-gauge beanbag rounds. Use of these devices could result in serious injury.
Patricia Ellsberg, wife of the late whistleblower and non-nuclear proliferation advocate Daniel Ellsberg, was among those to speak out.
It's insanity. We're in the grips of a violent, not necessary system of spending trillions of dollars to become less secure. And not just us, but life itself. What is going on here? And we're the odd men out. We're the ones getting arrested. I mean, come on. let's wake up.
Tycho drummers commemorated the bombing 80 years ago on August 6, 1945, that killed 140,000 people. And a second bomb on Nagasaki days later that killed 70,000 more Japanese, and the lasting impacts of radiation. Activists also commemorated the U.S. government's testing of nuclear weapons on indigenous lands in the decades that followed. Cheryl Spencer is co-chair of Disarm, End Wars Committee of the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, U.S.
I'd like to remember the victims of radiation. That is not just Alamogordo, Hiroshima, Nagasaki, but it's also the victims of nuclear testing in the Marshall Islands and several other places around the world. Those affected by uranium mining, particularly on Navajo land and other indigenous places around the world. There are so many parallels regarding 80 years ago and today. Right now we're seeing a rise of fascism. The bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki are reflected today in an increasing arms race.
The 80th anniversary of Hiroshima comes as the U.S. is planning to ramp up plutonium production and testing. That includes plans for an increase in shipments of plutonium from Los Alamos, New Mexico, through communities in the Southwest to Livermore, California. The Livermore Labs already has an estimated 1 ton of weapons-grade plutonium and highly enriched uranium, according to the Project on Government Oversight. Plutonium is a highly radioactive pollutant, its exposure known to cause cancer of the lungs, bones, and liver, particularly if inhaled. The nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office this year estimated the cost for the nuclear buildup would reach nearly $1 trillion over the next decade, $946 billion between 2025 and 2034, $95 billion a year on average. It's a 25% increase in nuclear spending compared to a 10-year projection from just 2 years ago in 2023. Many speakers noted that money could go to house the homeless, feed the poor, and provide health care.
7.2 million Californians who are poor, low wealth, living on the street, and homeless. They are across the rainbow. And many of those folks are veterans, suffering from PTSD. If the money that they spend on nuclear weapons and other forms of death and destruction were spent on vets, spent on housing, spent on food, many of the issues we have would not be.
I'm Christina Onnestad, reporting for Pacifica Radio, KPFA.
In national news, Texas Democratic lawmakers undeterred after bomb threat as redistricting battle spreads to more states, including California. KPFA's Christopher Martinez reports.
The redistricting war is heating up. Some of the Texas lawmakers who left the state had to evacuate their hotel in Illinois after a bomb threat was called in.
We are safe and we are undeterred.
Texas State Representative Ann Johnson was one of the Democrats in the hotel. She spoke to CBS News, saying the Democrats continue to experience threats and harassment.
I want everybody to remember, Trump's afraid of the voters. He asked Governor Abbott to steal him 5 seats. He is now threatening federal arrest to come get us, force us back in our spot, so that he can again do a power grab. None of this is American. All of this sounds like a dictator desperate to hold on to his power, and it should scare everybody in this country that we've reached this point.
The Texas Democrats say the redistricting plan is not just a Texas problem, but a problem for the entire country. Texas State Senator Carol Alvarado, who is in Boston, calls it a national alarm bell. State Senator Boris Miles is also now in Boston.
This mid-decade rigged districting, as I coined it, rigged districting, is nothing more than a farce. It's just another poll tax, okay? All it is another poll tax, another way to discriminate black and browns from voting in the state of Texas. But I want you to understand something. It's not just Texas. After Texas, it will be your state. After your state, it'll be this entire country.
The redistricting war is heating up in other ways, spreading beyond Texas to other states. The Trump administration is urging the governor of Missouri to call a special session to redistrict its congressional map to favor Republicans, while Vice President J.D. Vance will meet with Indiana's governor to discuss redistricting. Democratic states are considering their own redistricting moves in states like New York and Maryland. In California, Gavin Newsom is setting in motion a November ballot referendum to redraw congressional districts.
It's cause and effect. It's triggered on the basis of what occurs or doesn't occur in Texas. I hope they do the right thing. And if they do the right thing, then there'll be no cause for us to have to move forward. But again, we're working with the legislature on a trigger that if they do move forward, California will not sit by idly and watch this democracy waste away. We'll fight fire with fire, we'll assert ourselves, and we'll punch above our weight, and it will have profound impacts on the national outcome, not just here in the state of California.
Former Texas Congressmember Beto O'Rourke is raising funds to support the Texas Democrats, saying we gotta have their backs. And he supports the idea of Democratic states fighting fire with fire.
So we've got to take the gloves off, and we've got to fight them, and we've got to seize the initiative and stop waiting for these would-be fascists to land the punch and throw ours first and throw it harder. And that's what I'm starting to see from some of these Democratic governors across the country. And so more of that. And I think these Texas Democrats have inspired them, have set the example, and have shown the way. I think the election of 2026 is going to be decided in the summer of 2025. So we have to fight now and every day going forward.
Reporting for Pacifica Radio News KPFA, I'm Christopher Martinez.
And in National Native News, Antonia Gonzalez reads today's headlines.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Recently, members of the Gila River Indian community in Arizona revealed that the tribe's police chief was fired following a July town hall meeting to address violent crime across the nearly 600-square-mile reservation south of Phoenix. While leaders would not publicly confirm these claims, KJZZ's Gabriel Pietrazio has new details.
In a Sunday social media post, the Gila River Indian community confirmed that Jesse Crabtree is no longer the tribe's chief of police. He's replaced by Criminal Investigations Bureau Commander Jeffrey Hunter, now appointed acting chief, following a month-long internal review. Hunter has been on the force for 25 years, while Crabtree began serving in 2020 before being promoted chief 3 years later. The Gila River Police Department employs more than 120 sworn officers. By comparison, the neighboring Navajo Nation lays claim to being the biggest in Indian country, with over 200 police officers patrolling a sprawling reservation roughly 45 times greater in size than Gila River. Now a nationwide search is underway to find Gila River's next police chief, which the tribe says is meant to enhance public safety through meeting the needs of its leaders and members. A youth curfew aimed at curbing violent crime, largely stemming from juveniles, has been in effect since February. For National Native News, I'm Gabriel Pietrazio.
A 2018 law aimed at improving outcomes for children in Alaska's foster care system has not led to much meaningful progress, according to state audits. Last year, nearly 70% of the kids were Alaska Native and American Indian. Alaska Public Media's Rachel Cassandra has more.
When Deco Harvey was 16, she was removed from her mother's care and entered state custody. She and her little sister and brother went to live with their older sister. Harvey says her sister wasn't up for the kind of parenting she and her siblings needed. She says the household quickly became unlivable.
It was constantly dirty. It smelled horrendous. There was always screaming. There was no peace. There was no, like, order in the house.
Caseworkers from the Office of Children's Services, or OCS, are required to do home visits with kids at their placements every month. But Harvey says they never came to check on her and her siblings. And she says anytime she needed something from OCS, like getting a voucher for winter clothing, it was an uphill battle.
It was like pulling teeth trying to get in contact with an OCS worker. I would call them. I would go in person to their office.
Former lawmaker Les Guerra, a Democrat from Anchorage, was thinking about kids like Deco Harvey in 2017 when he introduced legislation proposing sweeping reforms of OCS. The law aimed to dramatically increase the number of caseworkers at the department to help reduce caseloads to an average of 13 for experienced workers. Guerra says he drafted the legislation with experts after careful research on successful models in other parts of the country.
We gave the state the gold standard and said, this is how you run a system so that children suffer as little trauma as possible, have as great a chance to succeed in this world as possible.
In order to keep tabs on the department's progress implementing the law, it required three audits. The final audit concluded that since the law passed, OCS hasn't implemented most of the law's requirements. The report shows 70% of experienced caseworkers still had more than 13 cases, often double or even triple that number. The office had high vacancy rates and turnover, which experts say leads to worse outcomes for kids. The report says that's despite the $20 million OCS got over the years to address labor challenges. In Anchorage, I'm Rachel Cassandra.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Lisa Music, and thanks to our reporters, Daniel Mintz, Dahlia Lozier, Christina Arnestad, Christopher Martinez, and Antonia Gonzalez. KMUD News is online, and you can find us on KMUD.org and now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commutes. You can also follow us on social media. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Redwood Community Radio, Inc. is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Nat Cardos.